the early days. This is Pat Kalshina, and it is June 11th, 2015, and I am interviewing Jane Liess, L-I-E-S-S. And Jane was born on, what is the date?
August 10th.
August 10th, 1952. So Jane, when did you arrive in Madison, or have you always lived here?
I moved to Madison in 76. I graduated from college out east, and 2 years after I graduated from college, I decided, because I didn't quite know what I was going to do, that I would apply for graduate school. So of course I got accepted into a master's degree of philosophy. And so I moved here August, I think it was, of 76.
And were you coming back home? Had you lived here before, or?
No, I'd grown up near Chicago. So in a way it was definitely closer to where I'd grown up,
uh-huh.
The Midwest. But no, I didn't know anybody here when I moved here. Yeah.
And where did you go to college in the East?
I went to Wellesley College near Boston.
Mm-hmm.
And after that I worked for 2 years at Harvard School of Public Health, and then I came out here.
Okay, and what were you pursuing in your master's degree?
It was philosophy, and with an emphasis on philosophy of science. I didn't ever get my degree. I did go to classes for 1 year and decided that, number one, I couldn't afford more, probably, and number two, I didn't get a TA-ship, which would have made it easier to afford more school, and number three, the only thing that I could do, obviously, with a philosophy degree is teach, and I'm just not a good teacher,
uh-huh.
I've decided over the years, and I thought at the time that you know, was probably not a good thing to do, so.
Okay, so you dropped out of the master's program. You didn't know anybody in Madison. What did you do next?
Well, by the time I dropped out, I had met people in the women's community here in Madison.
Uh-huh.
And I had gotten involved with Lesbian Switchboard, which was one of the earlier organizations for the lesbians here.
And what was the name of the organization?
Lesbian Switchboard. They had an office in the old YMCA building on campus on Francis Street. And there was at the time a vegetarian restaurant that was running there. All sorts of alternative kind of places had offices in that old Y.
Uh-huh. Do you remember the year?
It would have been 76, 77 that I first started attending, going, you know, to the meetings there. I believe it started several years earlier, probably in 74, 75, 74. Yeah. So at the time, there were some of the people who had founded it that were still around, but then, you know, as things go on, everyone disperses. And I believe it was in operation until at least 78 or 79, but it kind of died out for some reason. Nobody, took leadership, I guess, was the real problem.
Lesbian Switchboard,
yes.
What does the name signify? It sounds like a telephone.
It was.
It was.
A telephone service. We would take turns sitting in the office for our stints, usually in the evenings, I believe, and some on weekends. And we would answer the phone for anybody who had questions about lesbian whatever. And so we would direct people to the proper resources if we could, or tell people about our meetings if people wanted to meet, other lesbians or whatever. We did a few social things, but mostly what we would do is on Thursday nights we would go from Lesbian Switchboard and all walk over to the gay bar at the time, which was the back door. And so we would go over there as a group usually and just, have a good time and dance and whatever. And to get people kind of just acquainted with the group. And we had a lending library, so they had all sorts of books. And we had consciousness raising sessions, mm-hmm. and we had training sessions where we would train people to answer the phones, and just all sorts of that social kind of whatever.
Mm-hmm. So you were, I imagine, in your early 20s at this
time?
Yeah,
I was 24, mid-20s, probably 25.
Okay, okay. So what did this mean to you? Finding this group.
Well, I looked when I first came here because at college, in college I had had a group of friends, and we'd actually formed at Wellesley. As far as we know, it was the first lesbian group on campus. We called it the Middleine Society. That was where Sappho lived, was on the island.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
So it was kind of a code word. Mm-hmm. Many people didn't know what it was, but we had, I think my junior year probably, we started having meetings for that group, and we actually had in the student union type facility, we had an office there and meetings, and actually some of the lesbian faculty didn't come very often. They were still pretty closeted,
uh-huh.
and did not want to be exposed, though we knew that there were many of them out there. But the gay male, several of the gay men came to the meetings, and they were, for some reason, more comfortable, I guess, about out. And at the time on campus, though, you know, years later, we found out that all these people were lesbians and gay. It was still a fairly, I think because they had gotten some publicity in the New York Times, as well as it being a hotbed of lesbian activity, because it was still, you know, an all women's college, and most of that was just when a lot of the women's colleges went co-ed, and Wellesley firmly stood for being women's college. And I do recall an article in the New York Times saying that lesbians were all going to Wellesley, or all
mm-hmm.
the people at Wellesley were being influenced to be lesbians, or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we didn't know which came first, I guess. But
mm-hmm. And why did you choose Wellesley?
I chose Wellesley. I applied to several schools. The real reason was, when I was growing up, there was a couple who lived down the street, a young couple who lived down the street where I lived, and got to know them a little bit. My mother did. And the man had gone to MIT, and the woman had gone to Wellesley. Oh, this is Phyllis.
That's
hi, Phyllis.
Hi.
This is Pat Kulshina.
Pat, I believe you me too.
You too.
I'm sorry to interrupt.
That's okay.
So from her, I got a sense that Wellesley was wonderful, and it has a very rural kind of setting, though it's near Boston, and it's a beautiful campus. I think because I first heard of it from her, and my brother did end up going to MIT before I, went to college. He was 6 years older than me, and I did visit Wellesley when I was thinking of going to colleges, and it was probably the campus that
mm-hmm.
I applied at MIT and got in there, but it was the city, and it didn't appeal to me as much as
mm-hmm.
Wellesley was very. I'm not sure if it was because it was a women's college. Probably it was part of it. It was definitely partly that. I'd gone to a girls' high school, Catholic girls' high school, and I just didn't like the idea of having a place for, you know,
mm-hmm.
for just women, I think. And it's not that there weren't men at Wellesley who were on exchange programs and whatever, but it seemed that they placed their importance on
right.
on educating women. And
right. Had you come out to yourself?
Not until probably my sophomore year.
At Wellesley.
Yeah. I didn't know when I went, but I should have known, as everybody says. I probably should have known, but I didn't really realize it until sophomore year.
And what a welcoming place to discover
it was
that.
For the most part, the dorms, people were, it's not that they were okay with it necessarily. And the dorms, obviously, there were some people who pretty obviously kind of disapproved, but we had friends. We kind of came out towards it. It was definitely past the age, well, that's not really true. My freshman year, one of the lesbians was involved with a woman who I later got involved with. Anyway, they came to the attention somehow of a dean, and I'm not sure if it was through the parents or if it was through like a house mother or through how that became known, but I know that she transferred against her will sophomore year. And I know from a friend of mine who went to Wellesley in the 60s, late 50s, early 60s, she said that that often happened to lesbian couples in their era, that someone would bring it to the attention of you, the parents, or whatever, and then they would withdraw one of them. Or one of her friends actually was expelled. They had some charge of something that she had been found with alcohol or something, but many people were, and she was the only one expelled, so I think it was kind of a bogus thing. But by the time I went there, it really was, it was getting better.
Which is not to say that, I would imagine you lived with some concern nonetheless. It might have been a women's college.
Right.
With support in certain places, but you still could always be at risk, I would think.
Yeah, and though I participated in all these things, and the word lesbian was hard for me to say for some reason. And so to this day, my roommate at college, who I had roomed with for 2 years, is still, I think, hurt that I didn't tell her what was going on with me. Because I would stop sleeping in the room, obviously, when I was involved with somebody else and things. And she didn't get it, and I didn't say the word lesbian to her.
Right.
So she didn't. She just didn't get it. So it's hard to say how aware people were, or how aware we were. I mean, I know. I did seek out my junior year. I went into Boston for meetings of the Daughters of Politis.
You did? Well, you know, I think, tell me a little about that. Did you, when you took the lesbian history class, did you share this information in class?
Yes. I'm not sure about all of it, but some of it. But I'm not sure about all of it. But, I realized I was a lesbian and I couldn't find anyone else who wanted to go with me to this meeting in Boston. So I went all by myself, took the train into Boston.
Brave. Very brave.
And went down the street and found the address. And you had to walk up like 4 flights of stairs, I think it was.
Got an address.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
yeah.
I thought you said a dress, and I thought.
No.
Okay.
No. I was beyond that. I walked up the stairs and opened the door, and to me, and I had long blonde hair at the time, and I don't know, I'm sure I was dressed in slacks. I didn't wear, but I came in, and it was your worst possible stereotype of. Bull dykes and very feminine women, and I was just terrified. But once I sat down and got to talking and everything, I realized these are just people like me, But at first, you just it's like, oh my God, what am I getting into? And many of them were the older women who really formed, really helped all of the rest of us certainly come out.
Yeah.
But at the time, I was really scared. I think until I got to know some of the people. And they had at the time in Boston a newspaper called Gay Community News. And that went on for years in Boston. I don't know if it may even still be there. I'm not sure. Gay Community News. Charles Street was a place where there were a lot of homosexuals around. And this was definitely pre-AIDS and everything. And so, what's my point? I don't know if it was me.
Older women hung out with them.
Yeah. But
got
comfortable. One of the editors of the Gay Community News then was a woman whose name was Ellen B. Davis, and she and I got to talk. You know, we did things together and stuff. And she actually had me sponsor a lesbian dance at Wellesley College.
And you did it?
We did it in my dorm. I talked to my dorm parents, whatever they were called at the time. And I'm not sure that it might have been billed as a women's dance, but it was advertised.
Yeah, well.
So many women, and we had a women's band performing, a small women's group, and we had a dance. But it really felt so nice to have that, because I don't know if this is true of all the Ivy League women's colleges would have on weekends. They have specific weekends when men's colleges would be playing football or something. They have all these men all over the place. Like Dartmouth would come down and one. And they'd be everywhere, and they were all drunk out of their minds, and it was just really unpleasant. And it was just so nice to have
yes.
a different kind of a dance instead of
yes.
a dance.
Yes. So I'm thinking.
So that would have been in 73
or so, yeah.
72, maybe
okay.
I graduated in 74.
Okay. What a wonderful story. How'd the lesbian dance go?
It went very well. No objections. And a lot of people came from Boston. And yeah, I didn't hear any repercussions about it. So I guess it went well.
And did your parents know what you were up to during
this
time?
No, my father had pretty much left the family when I was pretty young. 10 or so, or pretty much, he kind of gradually drifted away. And my mother, at the time, I'm not sure, this is terrible, because she died when I was 35, 36.
Okay.
And we never talked about it, but she knew, she definitely knew. And she defended me, I know, to my I had an aunt who would object because I would bring a woman friend with me to family things, and especially to my grandmother's funeral, I brought her along. And I know that my mother said, well, she belongs there just as much as, so I know she defended me to other family members, but it was just, we never spoke the word lesbian.
Right.
But she knew that I lived with people, with other women, and that was my lifestyle, I guess. So, and she was fine with that. She was an amazing person because she had grown up in a fairly high, upper middle class. It was probably not wealthy. Well, it might have been, but she kind of changed with the times, and she was always very accepting of anything that we did, For me in particular, I went through Wellesley and graduated, and then, I was going to do academic stuff, which she kind of had figured I would do. But then after that, after a year or two, I was a secretary after I dropped out of school. And I was good at it, and I actually enjoyed it in a way, but I didn't want to go on to administrative stuff, and that was the only way to go up.
Right.
So I heard about an organization called Women in the Trades. And through them, I learned about, the apprenticeship programs and stuff, and I applied to be an electrician. So,
and you're in Madison at this time.
Yes,
then.
Yeah. This was after graduate school here in Madison. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, I'm jumping around.
No, that's good. No, that's just fine.
I'm jumping
that's
around.
That's just
it's
fine.
It's a stream of consciousness, you know, it's just wherever. But, so I got an apprenticeship and left the university, which was kind of hard to do because it was a very secure job. Oh, I didn't mention in all this that when I was a freshman in college, I became a diabetic, type 1 diabetic. And so I had to take, you know, insulin shots all the time and everything like that, and have been ever since. And the one good thing, I did experience times when, you know, I could not get insurance for any amount of money because they wouldn't insure, you know, prior condition.
That's right.
And so that's right. Why after I dropped out of school, I started working as a secretary at the university because they had very good mm-hmm. benefits. But then I had, when I became an electrician, they had fairly good benefits, but not, they didn't have, let's face it, they didn't have, you know, the continuity and everything like that, because oftentimes, as a tradesperson, you do get laid off for periods mm-hmm. during the year and that type of thing. And so it was a little scary having to
So your entire profession, did you lose your insurance the whole time you
no.
were an electrician?
No, they did. The union did offer insurance. It was just a matter of if you were going to be working enough to
okay.
pay for it and that type
I
of thing.
I see.
Yeah. They did have insurance, but it wasn't as sure a deal as
sure.
the university was.
Right.
So after I did my apprenticeship, which was 4 years at the time, where you work for different contractors, which was very good, educational to do different kinds of things, and had some problems, but made it through somehow. And after I worked for a few years, I got my master's license, and I then applied to work at the university again as an electrician.
Uh-huh.
And I got accepted, which was wonderful, because, and I worked there for 17 years before I actually am out on disability now. I can get retirement. I'm 62, I'll be 63, but I'm still on disability till I'm 65 because
uh-huh.
of the nerve problems from the diabetes. Called neuropathy.
Yes,
and,
I know what you're, yeah.
Unfortunately, don't have very good balance, and my doctor wouldn't allow me to be on ladders.
Of course not.
And, I didn't fall off ladders too much, but I ended up just falling a lot,
uh-huh.
and I broke my legs several times.
Wow.
I've had 4 broken legs now in the past some years, so, anyway, I did get disability, which was wonderful because
yes.
I wouldn't have gotten that unless I worked at the university. So.
That's right.
Yeah.
You were very lucky.
So, yeah, and I did think ahead on that. I mean, I
sure.
knew that was the case.
Sure.
It would be quite possible that I would need to be on disability at some point.
So you mentioned when you did your 4-year apprenticeship that I sensed that you had some tough times.
I did.
Tell me about that, and what was that about?
Well, I was the only woman, and my apprenticeship class was, I believe, 12 or 13. And there had been a woman the year before me, and a woman the year before that, but that was the only 3 women they had.
So you
so
were
far.
The third woman,
yeah.
And always alone. Hmm.
And. Yeah, and we never saw each other at work or anything like that. But
right.
we did get together through the Women in the Trades program,
yeah.
which was wonderful. And I think Nancy Nicole does it now. And anyway, at the time, we would meet, have evenings there where we would meet together. But so the school part of it was okay. But they were younger, for one thing, because I was 26, 20. Well, I was 28 when I started.
Okay.
And they were mostly just out of high school. Many of them acted like kids,
mm-hmm.
but it was okay. They were not too discriminatory or anything. The teacher was very good. But when you work at the school, which is one day every other week, you go to the school, and then the rest of the time you're placed in the job site, you know, which is a great way to learn, I think. I really think that's the way to go in terms of teaching people. But many of the men were very nice because they were fatherly, you know.
Yeah.
But that was okay, you know, and some of them were extremely nice. But some of them just were, they would say they would be doing things to help you kind of things, and then would say to other people, well, you can't do that, you know. They would be overly helpful so that they could essentially deny that you have the ability to do it. And so there were a few of those. And especially my second year, I had trouble with one of the people who I worked for. And he said to me at one point, he said, "You're just like my second daughter. My first daughter is busy all the time and, you know, go, go, go. And the second one is da, 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 da." And I am that way. I'm not trying to impress people with how fast I do things and everything. And he said, "You're just not going to make it." And he recommended that they fire me. And but he hadn't given me any specific things I'd done wrong or whatever. So I did talk to, I believe they have an apprenticeship board or something like that, and they placed me with a different company.
Good. So they saw what was going on.
I think they did. It's funny because I still see him at union things, and I obviously am not fond of him, but I found out later that there are many people who are not fond of him and who had trouble with him also. And what's funny is that he has his girls are very good at like hockey and things like very good at sports like that. So it's kind of odd to me, but maybe we just didn't get along. I'm not sure, but I think there are certainly some people in all sorts of jobs that want you to look, you know, really busy all the time, even if you're not doing anything.
Right.
And
right.
I think I wasn't that type of person. Maybe that was it. But the other people that I worked for, I think almost all of them were good and gave me, you know, recognition for you know, what I could do and things like that, and were really helpful. Excuse me. At the fourth year of apprenticeship, I had a fellow I consider my mentor, kind of, and he was just wonderful. He taught me control work, they call it. It's the more brainy side of doing electrical stuff, where you figure out controls for like furnaces and air conditioning and all the different things that need. Now they do it all with electronic stuff, but back then they did not do it all electronically. It was all more, you had to follow the circuit and diagrams and that type of thing. And he was one of these people. He would tell you the first thing you do when you get on the job is you find a good light and you mount that light and you over a table, you sit down and you look at all of the blueprints, and you just look at them and look at them and look at them. And other people would tell you, you know, you go in and you start working right away, and
right.
He was like, until you understand what really goes on, it's not useful to start working because half the time you're not doing the right thing, you know.
Right.
So,
interesting.
So he was very, 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 very encouraging and taught me a lot. So.
Nice.
Yeah, he died several years ago, and I went to his funeral and spoke there, and his daughters and stuff said that they enjoyed it.
And you worked at the university, you said, for
17
years.
2004.
Yeah, that would be 2004.
Yeah.
Yep.
15 years. Yeah.
Well, it sounds like you persevered and you weren't going to let something like that stop
you. I thought of dropping out, but then I thought, well, part of all this too was that the same day I started my apprenticeship program, after work, I went with a fellow who owns the stables here and went down and got my first horse the same day that evening. And I brought him up here to a stable. I'd never had a horse before, and my sister had gotten a horse, which I was very jealous of, and I hadn't gotten to ride him or anything, but she had a horse, and then she injured her knee and couldn't ride, and she offered me her horse. I said, okay.
Yeah.
I knew nothing about it. I knew nothing about horses. But I went down and got him and moved him out to Pleasant View Stables, where they had the hoofers, which was also a very good thing because they had a teaching, you know, program. So I learned what to do with the horse and stuff
and
like that.
And today, so many years later, yeah, how many horses do you own?
Well, I own three, but there are nine here. There's six others that I take care of. So, yeah. So,
you own three, but you take care of nine?
Some people board their horses here, so people sell them. Yeah.
Wow.
And that's kind of the reason for this room, too, so people can come in from the barn and go to the bathroom or wash their horse. Oh, I'm sorry, I couldn't turn the dryer off.
Oh, it's okay.
Wash their horse blankets or whatever.
I see.
Yeah. So.
Okay.
Yeah, makes it possible to have mine. Otherwise, it would be too expensive, probably, to board mine someplace.
Sure.
So this way, it kind of all works out.
Sure. You've created quite a life for yourself, and I'm glad we did that early stuff. That's good. So you're working at the university, and I'm thinking, were you involved in sports or lesbian organizations in Madison? Or?
Well, after Lesbian Switchboard, I really was not involved. I moved out of the city. I actually with one of my partners when I was still an apprentice, we had a lizards meeting at our place, and that was when I lived in Madison. I had gotten to know from attending a few lizards meetings, some other people in lizards. So I was a little young, but you may have heard her also was 13 years older, so I qualified as a friend of an older woman. But after that, once I really got into the horses, I kind of dropped out, so to speak, because I'd go to the variety shows or something like that. But
you would attend the variety show.
Yeah, and it's not... I was hidden or anything.
Right.
The people that I hung out with were mostly horse people.
Right.
And that was their focus rather than...
So you're working full-time at the university. You have horses. Mm-hmm. So you're very busy.
Yeah. I didn't have
and not living in town anymore.
Yeah.
All those things.
I did have the Humane Society. I was on the board of directors at the Dane County Humane Society and stuff, so... I did have a few other things that I, did.
Yeah,
but
very busy,
mostly animal-related. I decided early on I liked animals better than people. So I haven't been too engaged in a lot of people things. So, it's not that I don't enjoy people. I just, I think most of my... focus has been on animals.
I understand that.
Yeah.
So would you go into town for concerts and things of that sort?
Occasionally. I've never lived that far. Barneveld was the farthest I lived away from town. But I worked in Madison still, so I would ride. They had van pools and that type of thing. In Albany, too. I lived in Albany for a short time. But... more recently, I lived and worked at, I don't know if you've heard of Three Gates. It's a therapeutic riding facility.
I have heard of it,
It's between Oregon and Stoughton.
Uh-huh.
And I lived there actually for 9 years.
At the facility?
Yes, yeah, with the woman who was managing the, just taking care of the horses.
Was she your partner?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Well, so. It differs on this. She's one of the, well, I guess maybe she's the only person who, after we were involved and she left me, she decided she wasn't a lesbian anymore. So, anyway.
Yeah,
anyway.
I get it.
But at the time, I think we were involved.
Something was going on.
We were involved.
Yeah.
Anyway, and I think she thought so too, but something changed. She's a born again kind of person now.
Uh-huh.
So, anyway.
And you had this
we lived
connection around the horses.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, we lived there together and she took care of the horses. But then, it was a rather bad breakup.
Mm-hmm.
But I still talk to her actually several times a week still. So.
Huh, well, that's nice.
Yeah.
That's nice.
I've kept up. Actually, most of my friends are exes, which is kind mm-hmm. of odd. But my closest friends are definitely
mm-hmm.
who I have been involved with. Yeah.
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 I understand that.
But then, yeah. So.
Well, tell me about what the horses do for you. Tell me about you and horses.
Well, when I first got one, I would go out to the barn, you know, a few times a week and ride and learn to ride kind of. And Pleasant View was a very good place for that because, as I say, they were a teaching kind of facility. They had they had trails and they had an indoor arena. So I got to be one of the barn bums and hung around at the barn.
Yeah.
Then got to be more and more. And then it was almost every day of the week I'd go out there.
After work.
Mm-hmm.
Huh?
Yeah.
Huh.
And so I got to be a regular out there. And I guess it was partly the social thing of getting the people out there.
Mm-hmm.
But I definitely was trying to work on, you know, really subtle communication with the horse. What I practiced trying to do was dressage, they call
uh-huh.
it. I was never very good at it. And I'm not competitive at all, so I didn't show or anything
mm-hmm.
like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's also very expensive to do that kind of stuff.
Right.
So I did more, you know, I trail ride, but I tried to work on my horsemanship and equitation
mm-hmm.
kind
mm-hmm.
of things. And I then got a second horse. Then I got a third horse. And it got hurt. At that point, it got... So, I mean, I knew that I would have to have a place to...
And they're very expensive,
yeah.
I've heard,
they are.
Take care of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right now, I can't remember what the rates used to be, but to board a horse at most places is $300 a month,
uh-huh.
Which is pretty expensive when you consider.
Right.
And that doesn't count the veterinary and the...
Exactly.
And the farrier.
And any lessons you might want to take.
Yeah. That type of thing. Yeah, it can be a very expensive hobby.
Yeah.
So, but by that time I realized that I would have to have a place, you know, where I kept the horses. And first I moved to Barneveld and we just had the three horses. My partner at the time, her daughter had a horse and I had two. And so... So we lived out there, and I still had one horse that I half owned back at Pleasant View, so I could hang out with the barn people still. And then I moved to Three Gates is when I started, I kept having horses, and I've never had more than four, I guess, is the very most I've had, but usually I have three,
mm-hmm.
two or three, at least
mm-hmm.
three, probably is the most average number. And right now, at the time, I was riding a lot. I'd ride more than once a day, many
mm.
times. Some days I didn't ride. But you know, sometimes two or three horses even a day. But I have gotten out of that. Now that I've moved here and I feel very settled here, I don't know. I just like being here. And I like taking care of the horses.
Uh-huh.
And it's a, you know, bit of work, and you have to do it every day. And,
yes,
you know, it's probably,
yes.
you know, 3 hours a day just caring for them, and you have to do things like order things and
mm-hmm. whatever, mm-hmm. hold them for the vet and ferry or whatever. So I have gotten so that the horses that I have now, my one that I used to ride a lot, the last one that I rode a lot, died unfortunately 2 years ago. A very sad thing. So the horses that I have now are rescue horses that I've gotten, actually.
I noticed your shirt.
Yes, I wear their stuff all the time. Uh-huh. That's all I buy. They're kind of rideable. And I oftentimes have people with kids come out and they can ride them. But I don't aspire to anything with them. So I don't ride them very often, if at all. Maybe, probably not.
So what do you mean by that? They're not fun for you to ride because they aren't spirited enough?
No, they aren't. Well, the one I adopted, when I adopted him, I knew I was too big, gaining so much weight. I didn't used to be so fat. But I knew that his conformation and his size and everything else, that I wouldn't ride him ever, because he's a puppy dog. He's adorable. He's so cute. But he wasn't really suited to be ridden by me, at least a lighter person he could be ridden by. And so I've had some of the people who come here to ride, they have ridden him. And then he broke a coffin bone, which is a big deal, and he had to be off for months and months and months. But he's come back now. He could be ridden again. But, you know, there's not really anybody who's interested in riding him. And then another friend who came out was riding one of the horses, and she just kind of lost interest in riding. I don't know what it is, but probably because we don't have trails around here. Uh-huh. You can ride around the outside of the property, and I mow that all the time. And actually, in the back, there's a little pond and woods, mm-hmm. and stuff. So it's, you know, kind of pretty. But it's not like a long trail or anything like that. So you would have to trailer the horses to go someplace. I don't have a truck and trailer. My roommate does. But I don't have one myself. So anyway, I think I've just gotten out of riding. And it's not that I don't like riding, or not that I'm scared of riding, or not anything in particular. I just, I guess I more enjoy taking care of them. They have personalities, and it's kind of just fun to have them.
I understand what you're saying.
It's like I've got three dogs too, so I have all sorts of animals. So anyway, and I'm glad that I can take care of the ones that I can, and what's wonderful about this organization I got them from is they will take them back at any time. So if for some reason I couldn't keep them anymore, or die, or whatever, that they will be taken care of. And
that's good.
They find new homes for them. And even horses that can't be ridden, they find homes where they're amazing, because they have a beautiful website that they maintain well. And the woman is a photographer, and the man is a website designer, and they keep everything up to date. You have a discussion group so you can ask questions. Once you've been adopted a horse there, and they keep track of them for 5 years. You don't own the horse for 5 years. Because you have to prove that you're going to take care of them.
After 5 years, it becomes your horse.
Then it's yours, yes. Mm. But they will take them back even after you own them, though. Will take them back.
Sounds like a wonderful organization.
And they're very, very fine, Unfortunately, they're farther away than I would like. They're in Pittsville, which is right in the very center of the state.
Okay.
Pittsville. Which is, two and a quarter hours from here.
It's interesting. I think we connect with people through our activities. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the activities are connectors themselves. Mm-hmm. And your activity has morphed into horses, mm-hmm. and animals. And so I would imagine the people you're in contact with love the same things.
Many of them are.
Yeah.
And as I say, I'm still in touch with my exes who have undergone, two of them have undergone very traumatic deaths, which is part of why I'm coming to the death and dying thing.
Yeah.
Of their partners and stuff. And I have, obviously, I guess, gotten more involved lately in the last few years with like the, well, not Lizard so much, but the Rollers group.
Mm-hmm.
And I've met several people. I do the water volleyball at the Y. So some of my new lesbian do you know Jane Rowe?
Yes.
And Carol Berglund. Mm-hmm. Carol plays. She, just by chance, she started playing. And so I got to know her, and I knew Jane Rowe from years ago, which is funny, but I didn't know Carol. And another person, I don't know if you know Kathy Ackley, she used to go by the name of Fish, she's a, one of
yeah.
the old-time lesbians around
uh-huh.
town.
Uh-huh.
She started playing, too, just out of the blue. She was there one day, and I said, Kathy? And she said, Jane?
Well, isn't that wonderful?
I haven't seen her forever. Yeah.
So now there's this another contact
yeah.
place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
and
it's,
has that enhanced your life to have that
oh,
as well as the
definitely.
Animals?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Now I am a kind of a Y.
And
junkie.
The East Side
go,
Y.
Yeah,
yeah.
I go pretty much. Well, I was going pretty much every day. Now I'm not going Tuesdays and Thursdays because they changed their class schedule.
Uh-huh.
But I sometimes go Thursdays with.
Uh huh.
with a friend of mine who has Down syndrome, so he and I go sometimes, but
yeah.
Not all the time.
Yeah, it's a wonderful place, isn't
yeah,
it?
I do really like it.
I do too.
Yeah. You go in the mornings usually?
Yeah, yeah.
Do you swim or do you do?
No, I spin.
Oh,
I spin.
Oh, spinning class?
And I lift weights.
Oh, great, great. Oh, spinning is fun.
it is.
It's one of the things that I can't do since I broke my knee. It's bicycling.
Huh.
Because it doesn't bend enough.
Okay. You don't have enough flexibility.
Right. Yeah, there's not enough flexibility.
Broke your knee. Jeez, what a thing to
plateau,
break.
Tibial plateau, I guess it's called. Mm. Tibial plateau. That's one of the fractures.
Which is the top part of the tibia.
Yeah, I think it's right in here. So I don't know exactly where.
Seems like you've adjusted to your health challenges quite well. How do you find such equanimity with all that you've had to face?
I don't know. I just do what I can do. I've had some doctors. I have a primary care physician who just retired right now. I told her she couldn't retire till I was done, but she did. And so I'm not sure how that's going to go, but I have a special an endocrinologist that I go to twice a year, and she's wonderful as well. I had a good primary care. I found that, and I found a good... and she is very, very... There are some doctors, especially with people with diabetes, who are, you know, kind of all about the numbers and all about, you know, this
mm-hmm.
really tight control. And I found when I... first did when they first came out with the insulin pumps, I was one of the first people to get one and I loved it.
Mm.
And I was doing really well with it. But what happened was, well, number one, I started getting a lot of insulin reactions, too much insulin.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I wasn't able to tell. If you get them often enough, you kind of lose consciousness of the fact that they're occurring, and then you can lose consciousness. You know,
Ooh.
So that happened several times. But the other thing that was, I was getting pretty good about balancing everything again, and I started getting very sensitive skin. It started reacting with the infusion set and the, you know, the plastic that holds, I don't know what it is exactly, but they tried different metal infusion sets and this and that and that. But it didn't work. And once you started getting a allergic reaction, it wouldn't absorb the insulin, right? So you get really high blood sugars and it wouldn't work. So anyway, we tried for years to try to find something that would work, but it doesn't seem that anything does. So I'm back to just taking shots, which is fine. But
do you give them yourself?
Yeah, oh yeah, sure. Yeah, 5 times a day. So,
oh my gosh!
But those don't hurt so much as the pinpricks do, where you test your blood sugar.
Yeah,
you know?
Those
hurt.
They do
those hurt,
don't
more.
They?
Well,
yeah,
it's your fingertip maybe.
Partly. Yeah,
yeah. But anyway, but I seem to have managed pretty well considering that. I know when I was diagnosed, I was 18, and they said the life expectancy was 35 years. So I figured that anything beyond age 53 is good in my
sense. Right, right. And you've
I'm sure it's changed
passed way
then,
beyond
yeah,
that.
Yeah. So I'm at almost 10 years on that. And I'm not, you know, well, we've talked of death and dying. I'm not at all afraid of dying or anything like that. So I'm okay with everything. I know a lot of people would, you know, say, look at me and say, well, if you lose some weight, you know, and people also think, they always think when they hear diabetes, they think the type 2, which is associated with being overweight.
Right.
And I happen to be type 1 and overweight, which makes people think, well, you should, you know, shouldn't eat so much and everything. But I can balance it with that's the one good thing about taking insulin. You can eat cookies if you balance it. You take more insulin, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to figure out how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas with type 2, you can't. But I, the doctor, both of them have been very accepting of the things that I can't, that I do, and I do the exercise. I do, you know, I don't have terrible blood sugars. They aren't the best they could be, and my thought has always been, well, I could lose the weight, but I really like food. I'm just going to gain it back again. I know that I am. I know that I can't do it forever.
Uh huh. So it's quality of life for you.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, well, you know, why do that? That's even worse for you, they say.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't care enough, I guess. Or I don't, you know, it's not that important to me.
Right, and it's your decision.
For some people it is, obviously, the looks and everything
mm-hmm.
else. I have never been one who cared about my looks much. It's my sister who is Miss Makeup. She's actually the opposite of me. Will say I never cared for my look. But you know, it's just the way it is, I
mm-hmm.
guess. So I'm
mm-hmm.
pretty. I mean, in some ways, I've was involved with somebody who said, "Don't you want to improve yourself? You know, don't you want to do?" And I said, "Not really." She said, "I think that was the point when she left." You know, she was all about self improvement and getting better.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm pretty happy the way that.
Well, it sounds like you've created a life which really works for you.
Yeah.
What do the animals do for you? What is your menagerie? Why don't you say you have 3 horses and then you board another 6 more? You
have
3
dogs?
I have
3 dogs myself. And then I have, well, there are actually 11 cats. This not in here, but now I've got some of them are barn kitties. But 2 are Phyllis's, and 5 are kind of in and out cats. I have a cat door on the outside of
mm-hmm.
So they come and go, and there's a whole room for them in there. They have their own room. And then there are 4 cats who are just exclusively down at the barn,
uh-huh.
and who are kind of semi-feral. I've adopted several of them from, which is a wonderful organization, the Dane kind of. Dane County Friends of Ferals, which is a wonderful organization.
Yeah.
They'll take the cats that the Humane Society would euthanize
because
they're not adoptable, and they adopt them out, and many of them they find are not actually feral. They're just really scared, and they'll come around with some attention.
Mm-hmm.
But some of them, the ones that are actually feral, they will adopt out to farm situations where...
And they neuter them or something.
Oh, definitely,
They
neuter
them.
They're all... Yeah. Ready to go. You have to keep them in an enclosure. I've got a big crate out in the barn that I keep them in for, actually it's almost 2 months for them to get used to consider that they're
so they don't take off.
They don't just run.
Mm-hmm.
So you keep them in there.
Mm-hmm.
But after that, they stick around and they, you know, they like to be fed and petted. No, not all of them like to be petted. Several of them don't, but some of them actually do come
mm-hmm.
up and be petted and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So they seem to have a fairly nice life. The one who has been here, when I first moved into here, Phyllis was not here at the time. I had another partner, Kim, at the time. The first day we looked, the first evening, when we had our cars parked out here, we looked out in the evening and there were 13 cats sitting in the cars. The people had said that they didn't catch all the cats and take them with them. 13.
Indeed.
And none of them were neutered or spayed. So that summer we had quite a few kittens, but we found homes for them and got everybody spayed and neutered. So there's only one cat remaining of that original bunch. And she just last winter, that was 15 years ago that I moved here.
Okay.
And she just last winter moved into the house. Now she's a house kitty.
Oh. It took her 15 years to come in.
Well, I had to actually catch her and bring her in. But once she was in, she liked it in here. She hasn't left, really. She does once in a while, and it's nice out. She'll go for a walk down to the barn and look around and then come back up to the house.
Oh.
Use the cat door now that she knows how to use the cat door. But the others are seem perfectly happy down there. So it's, yeah, it's nice.
It's so obvious that it brings you so much joy. Can you imagine living a life without animals in it?
No, actually, I can't. Yeah, I don't understand.
Yeah.
I really don't understand people who do live without them.
Uh-huh.
I'm thinking in particular of my ex, who I'm kind of taking care of now. She was the one whose partner was run over by the on campus.
Yes, yes.
And they always had dogs when they were together, and she won't get any other animals. She lives in the house all by herself without
anything.
It's like, and she loves dogs, but she doesn't want to. I think she's just afraid to, another one will die or something like that. Or something like that. I'm not exactly sure why, but it's just like, how can you? Well, for me, it's like, how can you see these animals that need homes and not take as many as you? I mean, I understand there are limits, and I understand those limits are different for various people. And, you know, I probably am on the high side of most people's limits, but at least one, you know.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
One dog.
And you obviously care for them so well.
I try.
So are there lesbian animal organizations, or when you go to these rescue places, you must run into other lesbians because there are so.
I think so. I really haven't. The people who run this organization, a couple, a heterosexual couple, and they're wonderful people, and you know, not that are out. I'm sure there must be lesbians there, but not who are obvious or out. I think on the discussion group, you know, we have many people who contribute
online,
almost daily. It's an online discussion group, and people ask questions and everything. I don't get the sense from people who reply and stuff that any of them are, but they could well be.
Right.
I could ask.
But it seems like,
I could actually ask.
But it seems like that's not your primary focus with the group anyway. It's about animals.
Yeah, not the animal group, I guess.
Have you had relationships with gay men over the years?
Oh, definitely.
Tell me about that.
Actually, mostly when I was living in Boston, I actually had a gay male roommate.
Oh.
You don't mean relations.
No, I mean friendships.
Friendships. No. I thought afterwards, maybe I shouldn't have said it that way.
No.
I had a gay male roommate in Boston, and he was an organist and played at the churches there, and he knew very many other gay male organists. And we used to go out together sometimes to places, but he had a good friend, and this was in 76, who kept starting to have all these medical problems. It was definitely AIDS in retrospect.
That was 76. Early, wasn't it?
I don't think they identified it really till 80 or something. But he was, Jeff was his name, and he was a good friend. And when I've been here in Madison, I had a good friend at work when I worked at the university, named Michael, who was, working in the same building as I did. And we'd go out together.
Is he a librarian?
He was, years ago.
I know who you mean.
Michael Tall.
Yeah.
He's a sweetheart. And, let's see. And currently, it's usually just been one or two people that I've kept in touch with, not a whole group. But currently, I know one from, I volunteer at the Habitat Restore, and I know him from there. So I keep up with him. He moved recently and stuff. I help him move and stuff.
Do you still have any contact with women in the trades?
Not much. Once in a while, they send out notices of get-togethers and that type of thing. And once in a while, I have gone, but not in the past few years.
Uh-huh.
I do go once in a while to my union has get-togethers. And so I do see some women who have come after me and worked at the university. I do see them at those gatherings, but not specifically women's gatherings, But, yeah, we were pretty close, especially when we started out. But most of them have the ones that I knew originally, have gone on. One of them organizes the apprenticeship training for the whole state now. Another one was a plumber, and she got involved in the union hierarchy kind of thing. So many of them are not practicing anymore.
So when did you have any involvement with the AIDS crisis? A lot of lesbians joined in various ways.
I did not. The only thing I did go on one of the pre... What did they call that? It was one of the AIDS rides from Minneapolis to Chicago, but it was before it was a local thing. It was the big national one that everybody got so upset about.
Because of where the money went or something.
Right. And I thought it was wonderful. It was
you rode
so
your bike
fun.
From Minneapolis to Chicago?
Well, not all the way. Truth be known, no. But they had wonderful support groups. I think of the 5 days, I did one day completely. The others I got picked up here and there. That was too much.
But the intention was
good. The intention was there, and I raised the money, which I figured was the important part. Because it was $2,500 you had to raise. And I really, for people like me who are not bike riders, that was the only way I would have ever done it. It was so organized, and they had the meetings, and they had the whole manuals, and then they had practice sessions where you do 30 miles or 50 miles, and then you finally go and
pretty exciting.
Everything was so organized. The meals were really wonderful. They had entertainment every night.
Wow.
I'm sure it's well done now too. But they had showers there. They had all the tents were all put up when you got there. They had it all set for you. I'm sure it cost a lot more than it had to. However, they did raise a very substantial amount of money through doing it that way, and I think they got a lot more people joining in than probably they do now, because now I think you have to pretty much be a biker to do it, pretty much.
Yeah, the mileage is so long. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they don't have the support that they... I mean, they had people picking people up every half hour. They'd go by, and if you were stopped by the side of the road, they'd pick you up. And they had wonderful rest stops. It was really fun. It was wonderful. It was a good
experience.
Nice. But that's the only thing I did. I thought of volunteering, and driving people to appointments and all those things, and I haven't done it.
I understand. Well, you've always been very busy. I mean, you still are.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, but it is something not necessarily even AIDS, but older people who need rides and stuff like that. I think there's definitely a call for that. So,
So do you think about that, living more in the country?
Well, this is so convenient to town, but I don't really much. Because from here I can get to university hospitals in probably 20 minutes.
Huh.
Really? It's really pretty close. Because there's such good highway 51.
So it's close, but it's closer than it seems. Yeah,
I could take longer to get from one side of Madison.
Yes, indeed.
Other, certainly, but it takes me indeed. To get to town. Yeah.
So, did you ever go to the Michigan Women's Music Festival?
I've never been. Isn't that terrible?
Well,
never.
A lot of people haven't. Yeah. A lot of people haven't.
No, I have not.
How about bar culture? You said you'd go to the back door after the lesbian switchboard.
Mm-hmm.
Do you engage in that at all anymore?
Not anymore. I did, you know, some the first, and then when Liz Estrada was here, of course.
I didn't ask you about Liz Estrada. Precious Liz Estrada. Wonderful stories women have told about
it. I did play with a lesbian softball team, but I... completely unathletic. We were way down in the bottom of the barrel. But yeah, then we would go out afterwards. Yeah, so I did play maybe 2 years.
Who sponsored you, do you remember?
Why can't I think of the name of it? Fallen Women Productions.
Oh, Fallen Women, okay.
Yep.
Which we don't have any longer either.
No.
Yeah.
But that's what Joan started that, the friend of mine that lost the partner.
Uh-huh.
She was the founder of that, she and a friend, Carolyn.
So what'd you feel about Liz Estrada? What was that like for you?
Well, I enjoyed it very much. I mean, we'd go, it was nice to have a women's bar. I mean, going my way, they had the women's floor.
Right,
but it wasn't as nice, certainly, as Liz Estrada. Yeah. I was working in construction and building that Capital Center, I think it's called, the senior, those apartments.
Yes.
The night that Liz Estrada burned, the next day I came in and saw the smoke, and I said, what happened? It was awful. It was so sad.
Mm-hmm.
It was really sad. And, it was a big loss.
Yes.
It really was.
Yes.
But I guess there are other places. But I haven't been to the new ones at all. I don't. Is it Plan B? Is that?
Yeah, on East Washington.
I've never been there.
Mm-hmm.
And the one that's out, there's off of Fish Hatchery.
Right. Yeah.
No, I guess I haven't gone to any of them for a long time.
It's a different world now. I mean, yeah.
Well, they're all younger.
They're considerably younger.
What happened?
Music's considerably louder.
What happened?
Did you ever go to Apple Island when it was in?
No, I did not.
Okay. I have my little list here. How about the Hotel Washington?
Oh, yeah. I did like to go there very much. Yes, I did go there.
What'd you think?
Before that one came down to
yes.
Burn too, didn't it?
Ironic, isn't it?
Mm,
jeez.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I did like that. That was very...
Yeah, women's night on Wednesday nights.
Well, and the restaurant there, too, and stuff like that.
Oh, yes.
That was fun.
Yes, it was fun.
I didn't frequent it that often, but I did definitely went.
Yeah, my recollection is those were the times, certainly for me, that I stayed up much later than I do now.
Yeah, that's true, too.
How about house parties? I have had women tell me about... having house parties, not being out in the larger community, but a lot of sort of private parties.
No.
Yeah.
I guess not.
New Harvest Foundation?
No.
Any memories of that?
I mean, I've known of it.
Did you have any involvement with the first big march, the Galvanized March, that kind of was sparked from the 1987 March on Washington?
Was that when that started? I was going to say, I attended several...
I think it was 89, the big one, and it was snowing that morning.
I didn't attend that one, no. I did attend one in the some gay pride march or something in the probably 93 or so, or a few of them, I guess, in the 90s, but not back in 89.
Nope. Did you have any involvement with the United when it was called the United?
No. Mm-mm.
How about lesbian separatism?
I know some people, but I have never attended any of their meetings
That's really not your inclination.
No.
Yeah, yeah. And how about the murder of Catherine Rouse? Do you remember kind of putting yourself in context when that tragedy all happened?
Yes, I was working at the university as an electrician, and one of the places that I would often end up going, because we were dispatched by the police sometimes to fire calls, because I'd go when there were fire on campus.
Yeah.
So anyway, I was at police and security when they got the call to respond there, and heard about it from the police. And I, this friend Joan and I, always referred to her as Medusa. We were not fond of Catherine. But she, I know she did, you know, she was involved in Luz Estrada and obviously and everything. And but yeah, that was very, I can't even remember. Did the partner get killed? She killed the partner?
Yeah, and then herself.
And then herself, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
What was the woman's name? Do you recall?
I don't recall.
Vaguely might have known her, too. But it doesn't matter.
Were you surprised?
It didn't surprise you.
I
think that, I don't know, someone was such. She was kind of mentally ill. And I think her sister knew that too.
Well, do you remember when her sister made the public announcement?
Mm-hmm.
What was her name? Mary. Mary
Rouse.
That's it.
Yeah. The dean of students.
And I was very
really
moved by that public announcement.
She was a very good person.
Yes. Yes.
Yes. Yeah, being with the university at that time.
So I think lastly, what is your relationship with the church? When you went to a Catholic girls' school.
Yes, I did.
Did that forever cement your Catholicism or kill
it? Yeah, right. Best way to become an atheist is to go to a Catholic. And no, I have not been involved with any churches probably forever. I thought
you and
I think
Kate
in Boston
Clinton.
When you know they had like Dignity and those
types of things.
I don't recall ever going to them, but I thought about it sometimes. I don't really miss church. Religion I've found over the years that I don't really see, it's not really important to me. And I know there was a lot of spirituality and the Wiccan groups and stuff like that, but I just don't seem to. That's more personal, I guess, for me.
Right.
The group thing.
You know, I'm thinking. Boston sounded like such an alive, exciting place to be. Why did you not stay?
I would have stayed, except that it was expensive.
Even then, huh?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And I, this is another side story. The year after I graduated, I got hit by a truck at Harvard Square. Not many people have been hit by trucks at Harvard Square, but I was. I was knocked unconscious, and I don't know what. They actually had a police pursuit of the guy because he didn't stop. And they chased him all around Cambridge and finally got him. But anyway, I wasn't terribly injured. I was in the hospital for a week or two, but nothing really that permanent or anything like that. And anyway, I got some money from that, and not a lot because I didn't sue the guy, but I just got pain and suffering and or something like that. I don't know. But anyway, with that money, which at the time seemed like a lot, it was maybe $2,500. I don't know. But at the time, it seemed like a lot. It was in the 70s still. I thought, well, I'm either going to go to Paris and try, I was actually going to try to live there, or I'm going to go to graduate school. Why did I choose graduate school?
I don't
What's wrong
know.
With me?
You were young.
Anyway, so I thought, well, I'll try to go to graduate school and see what happens. And then that just happened.
Did you ever get to Paris?
Came here. No. Barely been out of the country, I think. Niagara Falls, maybe.
Well, you have a lot of responsibilities.
I do.
You have lot of critters that
really
can't
like
be left.
If I really traveling, I would not have the life
exactly.
that I do now.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. So yeah, we make choices, don't we?
Yeah. So anyway, but that's... I guess what I did with the money, and then when the money ran out, I had to find something else.
Right. And would you have been able to have horses in
Boston?
Oh, definitely
not. No, I would not. I had two cats in my apartment in Boston, but that was probably about all that I'd ever be able to have. And once I moved out here, I realized too that it's so populated out on the East Coast, mm-hmm. and you have to drive miles and miles to get to any place that's mm-hmm. not really crowded. And here, you can go 15 minutes and be out in the country, and there are just many advantages. And I was told, I was working in Boston when I, had to decide what to do, and I talked with, there was someone who was co-worker whose father taught here, and she had grown up in Madison, and she said, "Oh, well, you just love it. It's the Cambridge of the Midwest."
I was told it was the Berkeley of the Midwest because I
came
from the West Coast. Oh, that's wonderful. That's why we both ended up here with that. Oh.
I often thought that I would move back, and I went back a few times, the first few years, but then I realized that's ridiculous. I don't know.
Have you ever taken trips to Provincetown?
Oh, sure. Yes. Yeah. I've been there a few times. That was definitely fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been there. And well, we used to hitchhike. This is back in the day. We'd hitchhike to Cape Cod a lot of times from Wellesley up to Cape Cod. We'd hitchhike the other way to the Berkshire Mountains, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Those were the days.
Those were the days, weren't they? How lovely. How lovely. Well, is there anything you want to say that I haven't asked you?
Oh, I don't think so. I can't think of anything. I think it's wonderful that you're doing it. That really is. You must have heard some good stories.
Well, it's wonderful to hear your story.
Yeah.
Now I look forward to meeting your horses.
Great.
Thank you, Jane.